Welcome to Ever Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, everbeyondradio.com, Tiernasau from Ireland, ScottishSovereignsOnTheLand.ning.com. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. Greetings and welcome to Ever Beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio and Ever Beyond Radio. And yes, let me just switch on Tiernasau. There goes Tiernasau. Welcome Tiernasau in Ireland and Scottish Sovereigns, who is now called peopleforpeople.com. So it's all growing. The networks are growing. Welcome everybody on Wolf Spirit Radio. You'll actually be able to hear this thing in stereo. And I just have to say, the last thing that you heard, this really weird kind of these screechy sounds, throbbing. If you're listening on large speakers, and I really recommend listening to this on large speakers, if you're listening on large speakers and you had this cranked up, you could hear this kind of purring, throbbing sound. Then you would hear this very screechy sound, very spacey sound. Those are two recordings. One is the low sound is an Andromedan craft, and the high sound is a Pleiadian craft. And I mix them together with a bit of my own rock and roll composition. That's what you just heard. So thank you very much for your indulgence. Tonight my guests are members of the Andromedan Council, or report with the I'll get them to explain their relationship to us, to each other, to all the people that we all know seems to be growing an ET extraterrestrial consciousness network. It used to be people in the paranormal field, and UFOs and things like that. But we've kind of gone beyond UFOs. They're not UFOs, they're IFOs. We know who they are. There are people who can recognize them by their sound. Now you can recognize big ships by their sound. We have all kinds of visitors. There's all kinds of things going on in our local space. We've had reports from Good TXSG through David Wilcock and all that stuff about what's going on with various factions in secret space programs. So hopefully we're going to get some clarity on all this apparent madness that is going on right now. So I'd like to welcome, first of all, Tolek, and then Mark Kimmel, and greetings, and how are you, gentlemen?
JP, good evening. How are you?
I'm very well. So, what's going on, my friend? And do you want to make some introductions?
First of all, I'd like to say it's great to be here again. We haven't caught up in a while, and you're just a lovely gentleman. I've always enjoyed our conversations, and the discoveries that we have when we have these conversations, it seems that we all learn something from each other.
Absolutely.
I'm happy to be here.
You know, we all have a piece of the puzzle. And everybody's got a piece of each other's puzzle. So every conversation that you have with somebody will spark and open up boxes, because now it's the time, isn't it? Now is the time that, you know, we spoke how many years ago? About 3 years ago, I think, now. Almost like when you were first kind of coming out and you told the story of Dakota in the Pleiades. And I was fascinated because I've always had a connection with Taygeta. For some strange reason, and you said, "Ah, Taygeta," and it's like, "Ah, Taygeta, that's interesting." So, you know, I've got this picture of the Pleiades up on my wall. It's the only picture I have. Well, I've now got a picture from friends and paintings that friends have done. But it used to be the only picture I had was of the Pleiades. So, you spoke of the the migration, the colonization, the experiment, the
sure.
Pilgrims. I mean, there's loads of different ways of looking at why people come here. Why did people go to America? You know, why did people go to Canada? Or, you know, what was the New World all about? So this, at some time, was a brave new world for the Dakota people. So
absolutely.
That's where we came in.
Yeah.
And I've also spoken to Mark. Sorry to cut you off, but I've also spoken to Mark on a mm-hmm. separate occasion, mainly because I was deputizing for Rebecca, it was Rebecca's show that Mark had gone away for 3 years and then come back for 3 years. So there's all these little 3 year cycles that come back. So welcome both of you. And so Tulek, you can step up, have the floor, have the box, and I'll shut the heck up.
Well, JP, as I've said before, I'm always interested in hearing what you have to say, because you are certainly awakened and enlightened in your own right. So this will not be a conversation just with Mark Kimmel and I, but a conversation among all three of us, and I'm thankful for that. To make a long story short, the migration story of the people from the planet Dakota is probably not so different from other migration stories. They're people who wanted to venture out into a new frontier. They were husbands and wives and parents as well. There were children that made the journey. And it happened, interestingly enough, about 100,000 years ago. And they left the planet Dakota, which is one of the four planets that revolves around the sun, Taygeta, in the open star cluster called the Pleiades. And they arrived here, and, well, there's a lot of detail of the story, but to make a long one short, they initially initially landed in the area that people would know as Lemuria. And although they were interacting with the Lemurians, they did not intermingle. They kept their peoples separate. But they specifically chose to arrive at the Lemurian spaceport because the ethos and the lifestyles of living in close concert with nature, working at the vibratory level of nature, being aware of the connectedness with what we might call creator or source, those things were consistent between the Lemurians and the people from the planet Dakota, which is why they got along so well. And if you fast forward to the year 50,000, after the fall of Lemuria and Atlantis and a whole bunch of Earth changes, the people from Dakota migrated to the Asian coast and to the Pacific Northwest and to all of California, and eventually became essentially what we know today as the Native Americans of North America. Dakota, Lakota, Nakota, Comanche, Apache, Cherokee, Hopi, and the list goes on and on. That doesn't mean to say that they're all of the people from North America, but many of the who we call the Native Americans have Dakota lineage. And if you would see someone from Dakota today, they would look to be the men would be 7 foot something tall. The women would be at least a minimum of 6 foot 8. And when they would look like Native Americans. Long dark hair. They wouldn't have red skin like the Indians from the Southwest, because there's no real exposure to sun. But there's a little extra coloring. And they're tall, healthy, intelligent people. Now, there's a lot more to the story, but that's the essence of the story.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful.
And
go ahead.
Open up the floor to my brother Mark Kimmel, who's out there somewhere.
Please, Mark. You're preparing on your tea. Don't choke on you.
Hello to both of you. You know, this is a real pleasure because, JP, as you said, I have not really done any speaking out now for about 3 years, so it's a great pleasure to be here with both of you. I can see already we're going to have a tremendous amount of fun here tonight, because I'm coming from a very different place than where I was 3 years ago. I've had a long period of time here interacting with what I will call the non-physical beings. And so we can get into that. I can also see we're going to have lots of fun, because time is a very elusive construct, if we will. And so my concept of time, and maybe your concept of time, is going to be somewhat different, and we'll have to resolve some of that. So there's the dates, because people of the non-physical keep track of time much differently than those of us in physical. And indeed, my understanding is that on this planet, we have what we call linear time, which is quite different from time that might be kept for people from Andromeda, as an example. So we have all these different ideas of what time is all about floating around. And that's been one of my major challenges, is trying to figure out, okay, how do we reconcile this kind of time from that kind of time, and how does it make sense? So again, we'll have a lot of fun. I enjoy very much being here with both of you. We've had some good times together, and have had some good conversations, and I think we're going to have some more.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mark, because time is of the essence, more than it ever has been, because I was just doing a show with Laura Cross and Nancy Hopkins. Nancy Hopkins was a military intelligence officer in the 60s and 70s and 70s and 80s. And Laura's parents were part of the military industrial company. We were just talking about these horrific experiences, but also this amazing knowledge that comes through all of this suffering. People have a hard time being heard, or let's say in the last 30, 40 years, it's gotten almost, I don't want to use the word easier, but because it's not easy. It's not easy to kind of come out about stuff like this. You know, it's easier to say, you know, my president's, I can't say. So it's easier to come out as a homosexual, or, you know, like, you know, or something like that, than to say I've had extraterrestrial contact, and they're serious people, and they're coming to visit. So you better get the doilies out. So it's. First of all, I want to honor you. Thank you, both of you, for coming out into the open and talking about it, because it is hard. So that being said, because I want people to appreciate that it's not just like, oh, I'm going out there and you know, I'm just going to say that you know, I was talking to these Andromedans and they said this, that, and the other. It's not the same thing. It's a completely different case in both of you. You know, I've spoken to both of you, and you've both got different experiences, and it's not what people expect. So, having said all that, where would you like to start?
JP, may I comment? This is Tolik.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll speak for myself. I remember back in my early days in Tucson, when I first moved to Tucson back in the early 1990s, and I had a series of experiences which, with the utmost confidence that I can bring forward, told me unequivocally that we were not alone in this planet, A. B, that my soul essence, the origins of my soul essence, didn't come from this planet. Actually, originally came from the planet Picote. And that, oh yeah, I was somebody of interest to people from this thing called the Andromeda Council. And it has a couple of other names, but I was blown away. It changed my life. It absolutely changed my life. The moment when I started to learn about my own involvement with the Andromeda Council came in September of 2010. And there was sort of all of this, kind of like the floodgates opened up and all this information came forward. But I can tell you categorically that throughout the 1990s, I changed. Yeah, of course I evolved, but I evolved beyond what might be considered classic, you know, the classical evolution of a human male. All of the concepts that I was learning from my contact people that I was exposed to, that I integrated into my life, has created a very different person today. The person that I am today, as a matter of fact, is not the person that I was 3 weeks ago or 6 months ago or 6 years ago. Vastly, vastly different. And I continue to communicate with these people from what is known as the Andromeda Council. And it's always life-changing. Always. We are, and since I think one of the topics on target for tonight is the discussion of the human soul, we, if I understand this correctly, and guys jump in, we as an animated human body is much like what we would see in the movie Avatar. There's this, I call it a pizza slice. Let's call our total soul. Each of us come from a soul group, and each of us have our own unique soul expression. These are my words. And a part of that soul, a pizza slice of it, comes down here onto this planet and incarnates, and probably does it a few times, in a variety of bodies, male, female, from Pakistan, from India, from the US, from England, from China, from all over the place. And we have various Earth-based experiences. And I can account for at least that I actually have specific memories of, at least 7 or 8 of them, where I have very, very, very specific memories. Now, I'm certainly aware that I've had a lot more, but it's amazing to learn that I'm a lot more than my body. And I experience it at night when I have amazing experiences. I experience it during the day when I'm completely conscious and awake and I have certain knowings. So I guess my own perspective, even of what life is on this planet, is colored by the fact that I am not my body. Me, the human being, is far more than just this body that's living this lifetime. And that's just kind of my own unique perspective. Guys, how do you feel about that?
This is Mark. Let me jump in, and I think that except for maybe the words usage and that type of thing, Tolik, we're pretty much on the same page. However, what I have learned over these last 3 years, to me is something fairly profound. But before we get to that, you know, I went through that same period that you went through, which was an awakening to the fact that, number one, there are lots of beings other than the ones on this planet, call them extraterrestrials, if you will. And they're all over the place, and they're different colors and shapes and characteristics and everything else.
Right.
And then I went and also awakened to the fact that I was not an ordinary human being by any means, because I was being exposed to all of this, and there had to be something special as to why they were picking on me to have the particular experiences. And I still haven't figured out why me, but what I want to come back to is one of the most profound things that I learned over this last 3 years of my what I call my quiet time is that all of the universe that we see, this physical universe with all of the planets and the galaxies and on and on and on, it's what I call a energetic construct. And that energetic construct has been created, if you will, from the non-physical. You know, Einstein went and came up with this marvelous equation called E equals mc squared, a very profound insight. And so I have watched, I have experienced the creation of something that is physical from something that is not physical. So I've come to understand that all of this gigantic universe of which we talk about, and it indeed is a vast, wonderful place, was all created from the non-physical. It was created by some very, very powerful, for lack of a better word, I'm going to call them creator gods, because they're certainly more powerful than I am. But they created this universe, kind of one star system at a time, one galaxy at a time. It has happened over billions of years. It didn't happen in some burst of energy, you know, a few billion years ago, whatever it is. It has been very deliberate, and it has turned out to be this beautiful place in which we live, this planet, and this wonderful galaxy that we live in, and other galaxies. And so, but to me, it's that profound understanding that there are these very great beings who can create physicality. And so again, when I look upon myself, I see a physical being that is really a bunch of energy that has been slowed into a physical form. And it's like this computer that we're working on here, or the desk that I have. It's all energy that has been slowed enough that we think of it as being solid, but it's not really solid. It's energy that appears to be solid because that's how we see it. So I'll come back to the soul, but if you have any comments on that perspective, I'd like to hear that.
Mark, I do. This is Tolik. There's even recognition on the part of, you'll forgive me if I forget the name of the authors, but the people that brought forth both the book, I believe, as well as the movies, The Key and or The Secret.
Right.
And the essence of the message from both of those is when you set an intention to accomplish something. So intention, I think, as we'll all agree, is the energy of thought. And then you give that thought attention or fuel, added energy. Their thesis is that whatever you give intention and attention and you take action upon, it will come into form. So we are, in fact, creators in our own right. We use thought and energy to create and manifest things. And it happens, I believe it happens in a variety of ways throughout our lives. The kind of friendships, as an example, that I have with both of you gentlemen, work relationships that we have, and the list goes on and on, including even things that people manufacture from. And this is a really short story, but from one of my conversations very, very early on with the gentleman who's the commander of the Primary Andromeda Council Biosphere, he once said, and I'm paraphrasing, like, I'm amazed at what you people go through. Because he's always been a 4D fine essence matter human. He's never taken 3D form. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you people go through such lengths and invest so much energy to create things. We simply either use technology or our minds and we manifest it. Bang, it's done. You guys have to go through extreme lengths to create things. So those are just my comments and observations and thoughts about the people I'm communicating with and some of the things I've experienced in my life.
Yes, well, I agree with you totally, because that indeed is the way this happens, is that it is an intention, and it is applying that intention, and giving it the force of attention.
Right.
So first there's the intention, and then there is the power of attention applied to it. And I think that as we as humans become less and less physical, we will find it quite easy to create like that. Unfortunately, at the moment we're stuck in these fairly physical bodies, and it's fairly difficult to create physical things. Now, we can create relationships, we can create energies of from the heart, from the mind, and that type of thing. And yes, we can do that, but totally, I agree. But it's the physicality that I was addressing mostly that is way beyond me at this point in time. I'm hoping to get there at some point, and your friends from Andromeda are very correct. They can intend the starship Athabantium.
Yes.
Which I'm very familiar with, and which is, in place high above the Earth and full of people from Andromeda, was created through the intention of about a million people to simply say, we want a starship. And they created this starship, and it's a living organism. It's not this crazy thing made out of metal and all this type of thing. So Athabantian is a living organism that was created through intention. So yes, it's very, very true. That's the way these things happen. But I think for me, anyway, at this point in time, that's a little bit beyond where I am.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't quite get there.
No, not yet.
So can we come back to the idea of the soul? Because you were talking about that, if I may, for a moment.
Sure, go ahead.
What I have had is experiences at a soul level. And JP, you were asking how this happened. Well, it happened through 3 years of very intensive training. It happened through a daily practice. At the very beginning, I had no idea what I was doing. I slowly evolved into, I was led through this by a group of archangels and ascended masters, kind of step by step. They took my very rational mind and said, okay, just dismiss that rational mind because it's not going anywhere where we want to take you. And so I had to do that. And let me tell you, getting rid of the rational mind is a real trick. I still fall back into that, because when I write write things like this latest book of mine, I got to use the rational mind to actually sit down and put the words on paper. But once you dismiss the rational mind, then you can get over into this non-physical arena, and all of a sudden, you understand that. Well, if I go back in time, when I was growing up, I thought, oh, I have this little tiny soul within my, I think it's right around my heart or somewhere like that. It's this little tiny soul. And it's there. It's just a spark of the Creator. And, oh, I guess everybody has one of those. And so that's how I grew up. Now I understand that the opposite is true, in that I have a gigantic soul, that I'm a part of this gigantic soul. And this physical body of mine is this little tiny thing, really tiny, maybe 1/1000th of the size of my soul. And I have a fragment of that soul that is within this physical body for this lifetime. And that soul has been around, my greater soul has been around since the beginning of creation, for billions of years. And so I'm having this one lifetime for, 50, 100. I'm hoping to get up to 150 years. We'll see how that goes. But just, it's such a different perspective. If you can once come from the perspective of seeing yourself in this body, I kind of think of it, my body now is kind of a vehicle, and my soul is like in the driver's seat. And so if I want a different body, hey, I go trade it in and go get a different one.
Right.
So it's a different perspective.
JP, your own thoughts?
The big pizza, huh?
Scotland.
Well, yeah. I mean, souls and soul groups is something that I've been kind of studying for all these years, and particularly about their vibrations, you know, and I've got like this kind of classification, which is the seven rays and their, the way that each of the rays vibrate have a quality, which is, you know, it's the same as the qualities of, say, an astrological sign or a humor, as they used to call them, sanguine or phlegmatic. You know, it's a quality, and so the soul groups have a particular kind of keynote that can be characterized. And you know, we often see in science fiction movies the different characters. Sometimes they're in different colors, sometimes they're in they're different races. And again, they're in, you know, different colors. They all represent the different rays and different soul groups. Would you like to address, now, earlier, Tolek, you were talking about the colonization from Dakota, right? But they're not the only one. Who else has been here? And has there been any kind of big treaty between the whole group of everybody who live on the Earth that, you know, we're all going to kind of hang out and everything's going to be cool and nobody's going to rip each other off and backstab and all that stuff? Or has it just been a free-for-all? Is it just like random chaos and there's nothing in the way of any kind of agreement? Or has it been hijacked? Has something like that ever happened and has it been hijacked? Or, you know... Can you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, sure. There are gentlemen and women that are in-depth researchers that have looked, again, in-depth at a number of different races. But suffice it to say that from what I understand, what I've learned over time, there were... originally some creator beings, you know, higher density life forms that, with the knowledge that they had, created the first humans on this planet, or maybe you want to call them proto-humans, physical proto-humans, as the Earth was slowing down from its higher density, higher dimensional form, and we're talking millions and millions of years ago. And some of the very first soul forms that we're aware of that were on this planet actually came from somewhere else. They were the Lemurians, who came from another star system. And I had this discussion with a very, very close friend of mine, the name of Adana, about a month or so ago. And the essence of that story is the people from the Sirius B star system, the Anunnaki, the Draco reptilians, who were known to be master genesis, got together and genetically pulled together the right chromosomes, etc., to create the first proto-humans. And apparently there was a deal struck with the higher dimensional Lemurians, and they got fooled. They really thought they were going to have a really good thing inside this new Earth human 3D organic form. And from what I've learned, and I don't know all of the details, but essentially there are people that are on this planet today. About 75% of the souls here are who were Lemurians at one time that have been reincarnated in this cycle of being sort of trapped in an energetic matrix on this planet, reincarnating and reincarnating and reincarnating in Earth human bodies. That's not to say that Baker reptilians and others were the only people messing around with Earth humans. People from Sirius A have been people here. Have been here. The Lyrans, Vegans, people from Arcturus. There's a litany. There's a litany of involvement and or interference of the evolution of the Earth human. I think it's probably more accurate to say that the genetic, organic Earth human has been co-created and co-evolved over millions and thousands of years by a lot of different extraterrestrial races, for lack of better words. Matter of fact, Mark, I even saw that you touched on this in your new book called Chrysalis.
Yes.
Yeah, some of the same concepts I just touched on. I was like, yeah. Oh, look, that looks familiar.
Yeah, the only difference, my understanding, is a little bit different in that the original humans of this planet, way, way back before there was any extraterrestrial influence, that they were actually created as unique entities for this planet about 500 million years ago, long time ago, and that it took very primitive people, very, very primitive.
Right.
And that it was only after, a few million years, that then all of a sudden the other extraterrestrial races began to come here and think, oh, maybe we can take advantage of them.
Right.
Oh, maybe we could actually help them. Oh, well, maybe we can do a little help and maybe we can get something. Or maybe we can manipulate them genetically. Maybe we can manipulate them energetically. Maybe we can fiddle with their DNA. Maybe we can fiddle with their chakra system. Maybe we can mess with their brains. You know, all these different things that were done.
That's right.
Some in the interest of assisting and some in the interest of taking advantage of. And so, yes, today we are undoubtedly the result of having been messed with a whole lot down the line. But we are still very unique. At least it's my understanding that there are some unique things about the humans of this planet. And that's why everybody else is so interested to see what's happening here, is that despite all of the messing and positive influences, negative influences, and so on, we have maintained some very distinct things that are Earth human. And I don't know any other way to explain it other than to say, yeah, we're something special.
And it's that special thing. It's that, you know, we got that something special, that little sparkle. And we're in an energetic position right now. So let's right, okay. All right, I got one more question. This is my girlfriend's questions, right? She's the one about, okay, so the next thing, and this is the thing she's always getting on me about. Any thoughts, and please clarify this, any thoughts on the Pleiadians being some of the main infiltrators? This is her question.
What does she mean? Infiltrator?
She says that the Pleiadians are manipulators and have manipulated their way through, and they don't really belong on Earth, and they're kind of stuck here, and they shouldn't be here, and Metatron's a bad guy. Anyway, long story. But these are questions that she poses to me, so I'm thinking, I wonder who I can ask. I know, I'll ask these guys from the... Anyway, so please, if there's any response from that.
This is Mark. I think that...
Go for it.
one thing we tend to do is we paint with a very broad brush, and there's no such thing as the Palladians. There are different.
Thank you.
There are different.
Thank you.
Within the Pleiadians, there are different groupings within the Pleiadians, and some of the influences have been very beneficial, and some of the influences have been very detrimental. So I think we have to be very careful. And I think that's true of all of these extraterrestrial races that have had some influence here, whether they're the Syrians or, you know, Andromedans or whoever it is. It's been a mixed bag.
Yeah. You see, this is what I keep saying to her, you know, that there's 100 stars in the Pleiades. Oh, no, the Pleiades, Anyway. I'm convinced that she actually means the Aldebaranians. But, you know, that's another story. But actually, do you know anything about the Aldebaranians? And one of the things I study is the extraterrestrial connection with the Nazis, because they got time travel and they made a mess. I wonder if either of you have been briefed about that and about the rift in space-time that was caused by the Bell and the Philadelphia experiment. And I know this is a kind of change gear kind of thing, but I wonder if either of you have been briefed on that.
This is Tolik. I will say, first and foremost, the guy that you ought to talk to about this topic is a good friend of mine, Jim Nichols, from Tucson. He wrote a paper which has been turned into a video called The Mysteries of either Aldebaran or Aldebaran, and has an in-depth knowledge base of what you're asking about. So he would be a great guy to speak with, and I'll be happy to make the introduction sometime.
Sure, thank you.
Just briefly, I want to touch on this topic of the Pleiadians. JP, I'm sure you're at least somewhat familiar with the Billy Meyer contact case. Mark, I know that you are as well. That contact with the woman by the name of Semyasi, and for people who have never heard about this, there's enough research online, you can go find out about the case, but I understand that the translation for the word Semyasi simply means star woman. So, Semyasi and her father, Ptah, visited with this gentleman, Billy Meyer, who lived up in Switzerland, I guess in the foothills of the Alps, and back in the 70s he had years and years and years of personal contact with this star woman, Semyasi. She and her people are from the planet Era, which is one of the four planets that revolves around the star Tegeta, which is why I know a little more than most about this. It is true that people from the open star cluster called the Pleiades, from the star Tegeta, from the planet Era, had messed around, I'll put those words in single quotes, with people from the planet Earth a considerable amount. And there was a lot of involvement, and from what I understand, there's sort of like this karmic cycle that had gone on for years. And so by the time that Semyasi, in what was known as the 1970s of Earth time, came around, she was like, listen, we're not superheroes, we're not we're not angels, we're people that have simply... Now, keep in mind, most people don't know this, Semyasi, when she was here meeting with Billy Meyer, she was showing Billy Meyer a Caucasian, blonde female body, age mid-30s. She was, she and still is, a higher dimensional, whether you call it upper fourth, fifth dimensional person, who is manifesting a 3D organic body for the purposes of her interaction with Billy Meyer. But to make a long story short, she said, we have our own evolutionary cycle. We're not angels. We're not saviors. We're here to, Billy, you know, you as soul have been around for a long time. You're a gifted teacher. We're here to help you with your mission, and we're here to observe. That's it. So that's, and I'm comprising a lot of information in that story, but that's what Billy Meyer had to say about Semyasi and his interaction with her. And that's one expression of involvement of people from the Pleiades the star, you know, star Tegeta, and the planet is Era. Now, apparently, the planet that I'm from, Dakote, has none of that karmatic history with the people of Earth at all, except for the fact that there are these 200 some odd settlers that left Dakote, came down here to planet Earth, and formed their own Earth colony and began new lives here. And of course, their great 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 grandchildren are the Native Americans, and those people espouse a much different set of beliefs than does Western man. The beliefs of Native Americans are: go out, be in touch with the Creator, be in touch with all aspects of nature, the winged ones, birds that fly, the four-legged ones, animals, the fish in the sea. Commune with nature so you can be in touch with, I'm paraphrasing here, be in touch with the energy of creation, of Creator. Matter of fact, they talk many times about their own interactions with star people, and it's their ultimate journey to go back to the stars, which is where they came from. Now, I know that's a little bit of a digression from the Pleiades, but that's part of a Pleiadian heritage is Native Americans here on this planet. So that's my story. That's my story for now. Mark?
I think you're right on target there, both from the standpoint of Billy Meyer and your own personal experience. What I want to do is take us back just a moment, way back in time, to where these original third dimension humans were created. And let's keep in mind, these are really primitive people, and it took the off-planet folks to come and show them how to cultivate so they could grow crops, how to domesticate animals, how to do fire, how to go and the wheel, and all of these things that we kind of take for granted that came from these brilliant, evolving human beings. No, it didn't work that way. You know, I spent a career of 30 years as a venture capitalist working with a lot of entrepreneurs. And I know from a fact that if you get the entrepreneurs over a few beers, all of them will tell you that, well, I really didn't come up with these ideas. You know, it was in the shower, or I had a dream or something like this. Yes. And so there's all this outside influence that's been going on since day one. And I think we need to keep that in mind, that we have had incredible influences that have slowly, slowly evolved over the last hundreds of millions of years to where we are. And so, yeah, there's, you know, the Billy Meyer story is great. The Dakote story is wonderful. And I think there are hundreds of stories like that of various ET races coming here and being very, very beneficial. So that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, Mark, I can attest to the fact that not only the people from the planet Dakote, but the people of Vice Chairwoman Tanya, her planet is called Tyriel. So think of cereal, but with a T. And it revolves around the star called Mirach, M-I-R-A-C-H, which is located in what we on Earth would know as the Andromeda constellation. And her people came onto this planet a few thousand years ago, and they are the originators. They are the genesis people of the Scandinavians, Norwegians, and the Swedish people. Those really, really sort of corn silk blonde hair, blue eyed folks.
Right, right.
That's where her people are originally from, the planet Tyriel. I'm introducing this concept and merging it with the concept of the people from Dakote, because what's consistent between both sets of people is that they were very, very careful and very judicious about sharing their knowledge of technology and how they would reveal that knowledge and how they would reveal the actual technology to the local natives, the indigenous people of what was originally Lemuria. And then, of course, I think 6,000 years ago when Tanya's people came here, what were the indigenous people of Scandinavia? And interestingly enough, it's no mistake that the early stories of the Scandinavians talk about giants from another place. Well, the indigenous people were, you know, barely 5 feet tall, 5 foot two. And Tanya's people show up and they're 6'6", 6'8", 7'2", 7'4". They would be giants. But the point is, both people were very prudent and judicious about how they would release their technology and how they would share it. Very, very careful. Because they did not want to artificially influence the people any more than their natural evolution would have allowed.
Yes, and it's that gentleness that oftentimes is missed as we talk about the ET influence. I got to do a presentation here, and I was trying to find pictures of ETs. So I go on the internet and I'm looking around for pictures of ETs. You know, there are no pictures of benevolent ETs. Every one of them is a really ugly, distorted picture to a very great extent, because if the influence had been overwhelmingly negative, we would not be where we are. So where I'm coming from is that the influence from Pleiades and everywhere else has been very positive and uplifting, not nearly so negative as would be painted by a lot of other people.
Hmm.
So
yeah, I was at a conference. Let's see, autumn of last year. I think it was October. And I happened to bump into Travis Walton, and he and I were chatting, but that's not what was unique about the conference. It was, I forget which anniversary, but something, a conference in Presidio. And I was sitting there with my a good friend and kind of like adopted sister, Donna, and we were listening to Lloyd Pye speak. This is just months before he passed.
Uh-huh.
That's not what was unique. What was unique was the fact that there was a gentleman, based on where we were sitting, off to about 11 o'clock, who was of mocha coloring. And you could say, looking at him, that he might exhibit some African-American features, but you really didn't know what he looked like. But if anything, you'd say he was mixed kind of African-American race. Make a long story short, I was checking in with my Andromeda Council contact people. I said, you know, we saw this guy at this conference, and before I could even finish the thought coming out of my head, and they said, yes, your sense of perception is accurate. He's not from this planet. He's originally from Arcturus. He manifested the body to attend this conference and to observe and sit and watch and listen. And while I was there and this gentleman was sitting there, he didn't do anything different. He didn't say anything different. It's just his presence. He had a unique, I guess, energetic signature that I picked up on. And I kind of watched him for a little while. I said to Adana, I'm like, this guy's different. There's something about him that's different. And from what I understand from talking to Bob Dean and Jim Delatoso and other people that I know, they've been at conferences over the course of years and have said the same thing. It's like, there's some people here that are not from this planet. I watch you would watch Bob Dean's eyes get really big. and you know, they can clearly, the higher dimensional folks can clearly manifest 3D organic human forms and blend in. And for the most part, most people wouldn't even know it.
At all. Oh, exactly. Yep, exactly. Yep.
Mark, did you have? I know that you had a transformation conference in 12, and you've had other times where you've spoken publicly. Have you ever observed or sensed an ET presence or multiple ET presences when you guys were speaking or when you had conferences?
Good question.
I mean, I know obviously about your ability to communicate, but I'm just curious about your own sensory perception and picking up other physical.
No, I don't. I've had some momentary connections, okay, where you look at somebody and you know that's not human. Ah. That's somebody else. You look at the eyes. The eyes are, to me, the most important thing.
Yes.
And the eyes are, that the entire eye is a light blue and very intense, or the eyes are very yellow, and that type of thing. So I've had that experience, but in general, most of my communications, as you know, Tolik, have been of the non-physical type. And so I get a lot of communications from various off-planet, non-physical, okay? And so, no, I haven't had a lot of that.
Yeah.
Let's say that I'm aware of. How's that?
I was just curious.
Yeah.
How about you, JP? Anything unique that stands out for you in the different places you've traveled to or people that you've met?
I meet most people online, although, <it's> like, what can I say? It's been a very interesting interaction, the relationship that I have had for the last 3 years. I don't know what I can say completely about it, but it's like that we've been various places. You know, we come from different places.
Right.
She keeps blaming me for being this and that, but it's always my fault. But you know, I'm a guy, and that's apparently that's the way it happens with guys. They didn't tell me that one. Anyway, so there's like really, you know, it just feels like we're all extraterrestrials, and all my friends are extraterrestrials, and like here we are. The thing is that. All right, so I'm very. This is a thing that caught my ear earlier, Mark. You were talking about in Lemurian times, people were given the choice of going into a new physical form, a new body, like the human, what seems to be 1.0 or the new human, or you know whatever. And it seems to be the same thing that we're being offered with the transhuman agenda. What do you think of that?
Well, let me go back, and I'm going to drag us all the way back to the very beginning.
Hang on a second, I've got a sound effect for that. Hang on. Yeah, we're going to go all the way back to the beginning. Here we go. There we go. We're using the time machine. There we go.
Yeah, there we go. So if we go all the way back to the beginning, where these third dimension humans were originally created here. That these are, you know, these are maybe some of the way distant ancestors that might appear to be vaguely human, in that their soul really wasn't connected to the body, and they had a very minimal brain function.
Right.
And they were in a place where they were very fearful of everything around them, everything. And so they had a very dominant ego, and they only had two strands of DNA. So that was kind of, you know, a very primitive human being. And so we look at where we are today, and we have come a long ways from that. And I think it's well to go and kind of pat ourselves on the back as individual humans to think that, well, we've come a long ways. And I don't think many people understand exactly how far we have come. And yes, it's been the benefit of off-planet, but also it's a function of we have gone and done some amazing things ourselves, pulling ourselves up by the bootstraps, if you will. So now back to this moment in time, we're being given the opportunity now to go to the next level.
Right.
We're being given the opportunity now to basically get to the place where the folks from Andromeda are, which is fifth dimension, if you will, where the people from the Pleiades are, which is a fifth dimension. So we're being given that opportunity if we're willing to take it. Now, it's not something that happens automatically. It's something that, like everything else in life, you got to work at a little bit. But it's getting easier because there's people like the three of us that are kind of pointing the direction, and people are waking up and they're saying, hey, that sounds pretty neat. I'd like to have some of that. How do I do it? Well, there's plenty of people out there that can go and tell you how to go and raise your consciousness. And so it's a matter of saying, all right, I think I've had enough of this third dimensional stuff. You know, forget about the TV and all the stuff that goes on all day long with the politics and the monetary system and the terrorism and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. If you can get past that and move into a place where you're really comfortable with yourself, just being yourself, then all of a sudden you open up and you can become on the path, if you will, to going and raising your consciousness. And then what I did over these last 3 years, actually 5 years, is it's kind of a daily practice. And you slowly raise your consciousness. Keep in mind, I'm an old business guy, so it took a lot of 2x4s to get me there, where other people are probably a lot easier. But, you know, slowly you get to the point where you say, oh, I can function from this higher point of view. I don't have to be involved in all this crap that's going on around me.
Right. A higher consciousness, higher perspective. Higher simply from an evolutionary perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about accelerating evolution, where it's taken, you know, a million years to get to where we are now with a lot of help and continuing help. We're being given the opportunity now to accelerate that and kind of jump into the next level, which is what I would call a fifth dimensional level, where our bodies are going to change, our consciousness is going to change. We're going to be quite different. It's quite amazing. I've had a sampling of it. I wouldn't say I'm there all the time, but I can be there part of the time, and it's lovely. It's absolutely wonderful.
Excellent. Hey,
Mark. The more that I function, think, and feel, if you will, from a higher consciousness, higher perspective, and also the more that I'm out in nature, and I just, these aren't the right words, but it's the best I can do. The more that I allow my individual self to kind of melt away and become consistent with the vibration of nature, the vibration, which is the same vibration of love and light, actually, the more things that come to me intuitively, and I've said this recently in just a couple of recent interviews, I've got a sheet that I've been compiling. I've filled one page already. Since about May the 7th or 8th, of either events or words that have come to me which speak of not only synchronicity, but more importantly, confirmation that this path that I'm on of a higher self-awareness, this path of evolution, and I'm not talking about, well, who are you and what are you really good at? Well, I've gotten there. I know that part about me. I've achieved that much. I know what I'm good at and I know what I'm not good at. But I'm really talking about beyond that point of learning, being open to learning as much as possible, doing that with as little ego as involved. And I believe I don't quite have the vocabulary to describe what I'm trying to talk about, but at least for me, it happens the more that I'm out in nature, and I know I said this before, but the more I'm out in nature, the more that my frequency is in tune with the vibration of light and of love and of the next density or the next dimension up. That's the only point that I'm trying to make. And it seems that it's happening really fast for me right now. And it's been like quick. I mean, fast, especially over the past month. I know that this is leading to something. I'm not exactly sure what yet, but I seem to be having some pretty interesting experiences, both waking daytime and at night. So, and that's, this story I've just told is simply about my observance of my own evolution. And any comments from you guys, I'm welcome to hear.
Well, I think we should take a break first, and then we'll come back with it. Because people, would you be interested in taking phone calls? Because we can.
Sure.
In that case, we need to take a break. I need to drop this call. I need to call you back so that I can then take calls in on the phone line. Because they're gonna pour in. Okay. So thanks, guys. We'll be back in a couple of minutes' time. In about 5 minutes' time, you can go and refresh your cup of tea or coffee or, hopefully a sugar-free, yeast-free drink. Anyway, here we go.
You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
You need to drop the call. Okay. Hang on a second. Welcome back, everybody. I just need to reset this call. Hang on a second. Tolek, can you drop the call just now? And then I'll call you back, and that will allow call-ins to happen. You see?
Okay. Do you want me to drop, too?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Right, now this is getting everything in the right order. Everything's out of order, and now we're getting it. Thank you very much, Tolek. It's just getting everything in the right order, because now I'll have the button available to me that will say add to group call. Once that caller who's called about five times now, so hopefully they've got some good questions. We've still got questions that we've missed. Right. Oh, gosh. All right. Where are we going? Let's go back to my chat room. There was a very long question from a chat room right at the beginning. So let's deal with them. Right. So first of all, this is Dear Tolek. Many have spoken on the power of place, but few speak of the power of placement. In 2003, I gave away most of my possessions, said farewell to everyone I knew, and resigned corporate employment to journey to the strange lands of the desert mountains of Arizona. Can you speak on how one's location impacts the creation and the collective dream? Are we drawn to places as nodes in a great crystalline grid? Wow.
Wow. Tolek, you go first, and I have a very recent answer.
Okay. I will do my best to condense my answer. And it's consistent with what I was talking about before our break. Two-part answer. One, it's been known and I think stated by many other people beside me that the desert is a place of quiet, of serenity, of contemplation. And I know that when I moved from New England in the winter of 1991 to Tucson, Arizona, I was ready to leave the industrial Northeast, that corridor of I-95 and the Mass Turnpike and all of those thousands of people piled on top of each other. I had traveled throughout the country. I had seen different parts of the country before. And to be quite honest, what stuck with me, and there's a long story here, but the short version is I set up meetings, call them interviews, in Colorado and Arizona both. And I had three job offers, two from Phoenix, one from Tucson. I accepted the Tucson one. And that was initiated because of what I just described in terms of needing and wanting to get out of the industrial Northeast. But it was also set up as a sort of a gift from my parents. When we were a young family, Dad closed his business for about 2 months, and we went across country. And I was quite young at the time. I think I was 11 or so. But to bring a point to the story, I was, and I couldn't express it then, nor was I mature enough to express it, but I was awestruck at the grandeur and the beauty of the American Southwest. The breadth and scope of the land, the dryness of the air, the cleanliness, the cleanness of the air, and also the fact that there's far fewer people. So now we fast forward to 1991 and I relocated. I really felt blessed, and that was, and actually that was the right time in my life because I was in my really early 30s, I think I was 31 or so, and I needed to begin a new expression of life. And when I first moved there, I lived 14 miles northeast out of town up on Orolka Road, and I had my own what we'd call UFO sightings up there probably three or four times a week at least, but my life wasn't marked by that. It was marked by the fact that I could wander out in the desert in the peace and serenity of that place and come to know myself a lot better. And that was the beginning of my heightened evolution, the beginning of my awakenedness and awareness. And it was also the beginning of time when I started to meet people like Jim Nichols, Bob Dean, Jim Delatosa, Roger Scherer, and countless others who introduced me to the concept of other life in the universe. And then, of course, I had my own time travel experience with the commander of the Andromeda Council Biosphere in 93, and that's a story unto itself. But the bottom line is, I was drawn to the desert Southwest because of its peace and its serenity. And it was the beginning of my own personal evolution. So I would certainly recommend that experience to anybody who is looking to evolve, to change and to grow, to find a place of peace and of quiet where you can slow down long enough to hear the rumblings of your own inner voice. It's the best way I can say it.
Okay, all right. Well, let's see if we can bring in this call.
If the caller can wait for a moment, I know that Mark had something important he wanted to share.
Okay, good.
If you could,
you've turned off your radio. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. Let me just say, my experience has been quite different in that this all began for me in 1987, and I have had all of my experiences in Colorado. So what I have found is that in Colorado, I can go and get out of the major metropolitan area. It's very important, I think, to get into a place that has less of the frantic energy that's associated with a large collection of people.
Absolutely.
And so for myself, if I can simply get away from that, right now I live in the middle of a forest. I look out my window here and I've got tall pine trees and blue sky and white clouds, and it's a beautiful place. I have found that that's what works for me. So I'm not sure it's necessarily a specific place as much as it is being very sensitive to the energy and getting away from the conflicting energy that is so prominent in a congested area. So I would recommend to anybody getting out, even if it's just getting, a few miles away from the major city, getting out of that congestus. Then you can go and take time. What I say to everybody is, even if you are full-time employed, take a half hour, an hour each day, and just do nothing. Just be with yourself.
Yes.
That's what's important.
And what's, if I may say this, Mark, what's consistent with my story and yours, even though the dates and the places are different, we both chose to put ourselves in a place where nature was omnipresent. We were surrounded by the energy of nature. And whether you're talking about the desert Southwest or the mountains of Colorado, you're surrounded with the beauty of the nature of this planet. And you're right, it's both places that we're talking about. As a matter of fact, I was 14 miles northeast of the city. So I was, even though I was working in Tucson, I was out of being immersed in. I didn't live down in it. But because I was out of it, I had a chance to just wander around and walk and observe the energy and absorb the energy of the desert. And with you up in Colorado, you have the quiet and the energy of the mountains and the pines and the breezes through that area.
Yes. And I think that's what's important. Because once you become sensitive to who you are, then you can go and be sensitive to the energies that are coming at you. Because all of us are getting these energies 24/7. And I know that I sleep better, I function better. If I go to the big cities, I pick up that energy and I find it very difficult. So I have to retreat away from that.
Yeah.
So I've got to cover a lot of these questions. Here's another one. This is from L. E.L. What are the four sphere planet terraformer ships doing near Mars? There is some type of restoration project in the works for Mars? I think that's a question.
Caller, you said you have your own question?
No. Good evening, Jay, Tolik, and Mark. This is Sherry. I called your last show. I just have a few things to share before you get to that topic, which I could address, but I won't. As far as being called to a place, I moved to Montana because I was told to by six-dimensional beings. But I had been called to Montana for many, many, many years. And when I got here, I moved into an area where I am completely surrounded by trees right outside my window. And it is ultimately quiet here, just like both of you have just described. That helps. I have been doing transcendental meditation for many years and was already an intuitive medium, because our soul, I want to address the soul actually, our soul is multidimensional, so I communicate with it, whether here or after transition. But as far as nature goes, after I moved here, because my abilities had already been woken up, I now communicate because I have been in the silence of nature and communing with Mother Earth in a place where I was always called to, which I think is something very important to listen to from your inner intuitive self. I now communicate with the trees. I communicate with Gaia, Sophia. She actually speaks to me in a very melodious, feminine voice. So that's what getting in nature does for us. It literally wakes up our soul. It wakes up our dormant abilities. And that's what I see as being so crucial into getting into nature. And as far as the soul goes, we are multidimensional beings, our soul. And with this quote-unquote ascension, we are literally bringing the fourth, fifth, and sixth matrix of our own soul into our bodies again that have been locked out because we have are now being offered this opportunity. And so with me, because I have had a high vibration, I was able to communicate with people after they pass because we are multidimensional beings, and they are aware of individuals like me on the planet because of our vibration, which is our signature and our name, that they can come through and communicate to their loved ones because there is no time or place. It's all about dimensions, frequency. And so our soul is a very, very powerful essence, and we literally have an opportunity now to get back what was basically taken from us all those years ago with that intervention.
This is Mark. This is Mark. May I make a comment?
Oh, absolutely.
What I have learned recently is that, okay, you have now found this place of peace and quiet, and you have evolved to a different place. But that is not the reason you came here. The reason you came here was to take that energy now out into places that are less quiet and help the people that live there, show them the path. So it's not to go and to hide in a quiet place. It's to go and take that learning out in some way, shape, or form. And I mean, this is just for me, but it's I'm being encouraged now, which is why I write books and that type of thing, to take what I have learned and to share it. And part of that is to move out of maybe a real quiet place where I live and into a less quiet place where I can influence people, not directly, but simply from my energy. Because yes, we go and have energies that people read subconsciously, and that's what's important.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree with you more. I certainly don't sit in my home and hide. That is my mission. I am here on this planet at this time to help people with their vibratory upliftment. And that is my sole purpose, really, for being here. And I have been doing that since I was in the cradle. So it's not a matter of going to a place that you're called to so that you can grow as a being, but it helps you to grow so that you can then serve mankind more effectively.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well said, sure.
More.
Yeah.
So anyway, I had my 2 cents to add. There's just so much about our souls that is so exciting, our essence that people are going to discover. And as a small child with terrible, terrible, agonizing pain and bad health, I became very aware. I got intimate knowledge that I was not my body at a very young age. And that's what people are more and more going to wake up to, that we are an essence that is in a very, very strong matter body. And we have an opportunity now to move up in frequency and relinquish this body and have very, very exciting new experiences, or to continue on in our physical bodies if one chooses, and have more experiences that way. But the soul is an extraordinary creation that is in this world from Source Creator, so that Source Creator can experience every level of existence. And that's about all I guess I better share.
Well said.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for taking my call. It's always like coming home when I hear your voice, Tolek.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking it. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye, Sherry. Thank you very much. So, there we go. Meanwhile, the questions have been piling in.
Yes.
All right, here we go. Here we go. This is, so there's more. There's more from 3309. This is a non-3309. So how does a human soul fit into this grid? And please add, since arriving in the Arizonan mountains, I have been greeted by the ships every time I walk outdoors at night. So, the Andromedan ships. Let me see if I can find it. I made a little piece from without the music of the two ships wandering around. I might play that right sort of towards the end of the show, just to hear the Pleiadians and the Andromedans. If you got big speakers, turn them up, you know, and sit between them, because you know it's quite fun. Anyway, meanwhile, okay.
Next,
here we go. Do you know anything about the dog-headed people from Sirius A, the Anubians, which is what she calls them? This is a question from Wolf Baby.
This is Tolik. I do not, no.
This was Mark. I do not. Sorry about that.
Okay, so most of the council that you meet are either like a fifth dimensional, or they sit in a humanoid kind of body, if you like. They represent in a humanoid type body. That you don't have like duck headed or. See, I've got this terrible fantasy. It's a nightmare fantasy, right? That one day I meet a race of beings who are ducks. They are evolved ducks. They're duck faced people and duck headed people, and they. And they look through my Facebook post, and there's the Christmas meal, and they're going, "Oh, what's that? That looks like a nice thing. You're having a nice time there. Yeah, that's Christmas. Oh, what's Christmas? Oh, well, we celebrate the birth of our Savior, Jesus, Lord Christ. And how do you do that? Well, we have a Easter's really good as well. and I imagine this kind of really paranoid guilt fantasy about eating ducks and eating bird people and like being sorry. So I've got much more of it, you know, if I ever eat meat now, I have a much more honoring kind of, you know, thank you very much for giving up your life or kind of thing. So the question is, do you meet other than human-faced people? Let's say that. Let's go there. Human-faced people, because we've been talking about the greys and everybody and the reptiles and things like that, which are part of the regressives, aren't they? And do you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, for me, Tolik, I can tell you that early on in my extraordinarily fast sort of ramp up process, when I was consciously meeting the people from the Andromeda Council for the first time, at least in this current Earth form body, I was going through this ramp up phase, and I will never forget an experience that I was having. I was being given a tour by a woman called Azar, who was actually the chief medical officer for all the Andromeda Council biospheres. She was teamed up with Vice Chairwoman Tanya of the Council, and they were giving me a tour of, I don't know quite how to describe it, except for this area on one of the biospheres where somehow a number of multidimensional beings are able to function all in the same space. I won't say time, just the same space. And apparently, I had gotten through 10 different races of people, and they all looked really, really different. The summary of the story is this. They introduced me to a being, the 11th being, and being number 11 looked like a one-third version of, if anybody knows Star Wars, the guy called Jabba the Hutt. And he, my expression for him was slimy worm guy, and I freaked out. It's like, get me out of here! Because even at one third of the size of Jabba the Hutt, this guy was big.
That's big enough, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are all sorts of humanoid races throughout the cosmos, you know, that are insectoid-based and Earth, not Earth, sorry, humans of various colors and shapes and sizes, and little ears, no ears, big ears, small noses, big noses, all sorts of humanoids. And there are others as well. Multiple arms. There are just a lot of varieties of humanoids, including some that are certainly not humanoid looking at all. So that's my story. It's a lot longer, but that's the short version.
Thank you.
This is Mark. I really don't have much to add to that.
Thanks very much, Mark. Area code 604. Who's this, and what's your question?
Hi, this is Elle. My question is for Tolik. Recently, I was astral traveling in space, and I had seen these four terraformer spherical ships approaching Mars in some time close to the near future to terraform it. So I'm just wondering if he knows anything about it, what's going down with Mars.
My own understanding of Mars is that in recent years, the Draco reptilians, now I'm not talking about in the past 6 to 8 months, but in recent years, the Draco reptilians, as well as their cohorts from Orion, little gray assistants as well, they and some other ETs have occupied Mars over the course of years. But predominantly the Draco reptilians, as well as some very early humans. They're humans on Mars, unique humans to the Martian surface. I understand those people live underground predominantly, but there's sort of this tenuous truce between the humans that are there and the reptilians that have been there. Now, sometime within the past, I believe it's two and a half years, the Draco reptilian bases that were causing real problems were cleaned out and shut down on Mars, as well as those on Earth. I personally am not aware of any terraforming ships being provided by the Andromeda Council. I know that the Andromeda Council is a major contributor to this thing called the Sphere Alliance. So there's not only the 12 Andromeda Council biospheres that are around Earth space and spread around our solar system, but there are other spheres as well. And they belong to a variety of other star systems. Can higher dimensional people use technologies to terraform planets? Absolutely, they can.
I saw them shooting like this plasma matter or something, like this living matter into the planet. Quite interesting.
Yeah, quite possible. I don't have any personal knowledge of it, but I'm able to share with you, what I've known to date so far. Mark, do you have any observations?
No, I'll pass on this one.
Okay, well, actually, this does bring us to another question. Is that everything, Elle? Yeah.
Yes, okay. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks very much, then. Bye-bye. So, this does bring us to another question, which is big in the scene at the moment, is the whole Sphere Being Alliance. Whatever's been disclosed by Corey Good, do the Andromedan Council have any comments on what they've been having to say? We're talking about these creatures they call the Blue Avians, four races. They were talking about four races that are just kind of out from nowhere, higher dimensional, that can anywhere they like. Sure. They don't need ships.
Yeah. Long story short, the people who are called Blue Avians by good ETXSG Corey, as well as the people of the secret space program that he's aligned with, best way to say it. I had this conversation at length with my good friend Adona, and the really short version is those people are one of five races originally from the planet Nibiru, who are generally called Anunnaki. Now, the Anunnaki are one of five races the people called the Blue Avians, their original name is Anuans, A-N-N-U-A-N-S. Still and continue today to be higher dimensional people. Any higher dimensional people, whether you're talking about upper 4D, 5D, they can manifest whatever form that they want to show to people. And they can also manifest other things as well. So can they create things simply out of intention and out of intelligence and out of energy? Yeah, absolutely. As to the Sphere Alliance, it's real. The Andromeda Council makes up about 50%. Let me say this. In terms of the makeup of... There are at least five different star systems with a number of races of people that have been contributed from the Andromeda Council that make up the Sphere Alliance. And I can't speak with any amount of intelligence as to any of the other races, but I know the Andromeda Council contributes a lot to that effort. Corey's connection and his alignment is with the one of the secret space programs, which is an offshoot of Earth deep space technology, and they've been operating in space for a while. So I don't know if that helps answer the question, but that's my answer.
Good. Thank you very much. Because you know, there's a lot going on. All right. Yep. Here's okay. Go ahead, Mark. Sorry.
I have a question for Tola. Can you elaborate any more on the secret deep space program?
Typically what I do is I will ask them questions either based on them being my Andromeda Council contacts. I'll ask them questions based on my own inner prompting or based on questions that other people ask me. And in terms of that program, you know, the Sphere Alliance, and I'm sorry, Mark, go ahead, and I just lost my train of thought. Ask me again.
Can you elaborate further on the secret deep space programs?
It's not something that I know a lot about. What I do know is that, at least based on what Corey has said, good E.T. Corey, is that the oldest program called Solar Warden is the one that has created some kind of alignment and cooperation with the people that collectively make up what this deep space program calls the Sphere Alliance. There's been some cooperative efforts. Now, I know that this Sphere Alliance, that part of the makeup is, in fact, from the Andromeda Council, because they gave me a listing of the star systems and races of people of the Andromeda Council that are contributing to that effort. And there are at least five star systems with a multiplicity of races. I think the listing is at least 20 races of different higher dimensional people. And not only upper 4D, 5D, but 6D, 7D, 9D. Higher, you know, much higher dimensional people as well. So
okay.
it's definitely a higher dimensional collaborative effort.
Are there Earth humans involved in this?
Whatever I say now will have to come from hearsay, because people have written to me about this guy, good E.T. Corey, and what he has said. And what he has said is that there are people from all around planet Earth that have been picked up and sent to an off-Earth world for quote-unquote Federation conferences and meetings to prepare for what he calls the event. It's possible that what he is calling the event is sometime in our future when there's either open... I would have to say it's either open ET contact or the transformation of this world to a higher dimensional planet, you know, 5D and above, course, first upper 4D and 5D. But it's my knowledge of Earth people attending these conferences is simply from what people have said that Corey has said.
Okay,
If you'd like to, sure, you're welcome. If you'd like to read about it, there were interviews that were cited with Michael Sala, who's got...
Yes.
Yeah, and so you can go to his website and read the information pretty easily.
Right. Okay. Back to you, JP.
Okie doke. So here's another one. And this is a nice one. There we go. So this is from Steph. Do you have any thoughts or advice on the new rainbow children coming in who are fearless avatars and a ray of hope for our planet's ascension?
Mark?
Well, to me, the rainbow children or crystal children, or there's a number of names for them, they are extraordinary. They're coming in, quite frequently now, ever since December of 2012. Most of the children that have come in since that time have been born without the ingrained fear that all of us got when we came in. So they simply do not understand the whole idea of fear. It's not ingrained. They don't get it. And so it's very easy for them to be quite extraordinary. To me, it's very, very hopeful for the future of this planet that they're here. I think that they will become the future of the planet. They're going to grow up very quickly, and they're going to take over probably in their 20s.
Hey, Mark, I've got a follow-up question to what you just addressed. When I was reading your book, and I spent some time reading it this weekend, your new book, Chrysalis, I came across the concept. Yeah, you're welcome, and I'm enjoying it. I came across the concept, and I'll do my best to quote you. In December 2012, the underpinnings of the third dimension were removed, this is from Earth, and the multidimensional pathway was opened. I have certainly my own for information from what the Andromeda Council told me happened on December 21, but of 2012. Can you tell me what this statement means in terms of the underpinnings of the third dimension being removed from planet Earth? Can you express that for me?
We need to go back in time for just a little bit, back to the creation of the initial humans. At that point in time, there was something which we like to call third dimension, which was created on this planet. And it's a very rigid type of environment. And the initial humans of that point in time were thrust into this very rigid environment. Rigid. It was done in such a way that they had they felt separate. They felt very dense. They had fear. They had survival. They had the energy of domination, trying to dominate each other and that type of thing. So that's third dimension for this planet. And I won't talk about third dimension out in the rest of the physical universe, because I don't think that what we have as third dimension really exists anywhere else. So what happened in December of 2012? Now keep in mind that this third dimension, once again, is an energy construct.
Okay,
energy construct, like the table, like the computer, are all energy constructs. And so if they were constructed out of energy, then if you go and pull out the glue that holds that third dimension in place, there's no foundation for it anymore. And so it's like existing on quicksand. So that's what we have now, is we have a third dimension sort of on this planet, but it has no foundation. So it's very easy now for everybody to move into the higher dimensions. And that's the magic of what happened in December of 2012. And it's a very magical moment. It became extraordinarily easy for everybody, if they'll just wake up and decide to leave the old way of doing things behind, that they can then transform themselves much easier than ever before into a higher dimensional being.
So I'll use, this is Tolek, I'll use my words to try to describe what I think I'm hearing. You're talking about sort of an energy construct in terms of the ethos of general society, how people felt about themselves, each other, the fact that it was domination-based or competitive-based, and that way of thinking, that way of feeling, the energy that supported those ways of being was somehow removed.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
And so what we have now is just the momentum of everybody thinking, well, that's the way it used to be. It must be the same way right now. And so what we have is just the continuing momentum of this going on. We don't have the reality of it anymore.
And
that makes sense.
If you will, the residue of this, not only momentum, but the residue of this 3D energy construct. Mark?
Yeah, I think we've lost him. He's decided to...
Oh, there he is.
Are you back, Mark?
Oh.
There we go.
I'm back. Hello?
Okay.
Hey, Mark, sorry about that. We lost you partway through your conversation.
I got an energy zap of some sort. I must be doing the right thing. I got an energy zap.
Excellent.
Mark, deconstruction of this 3D energy construct, for lack of better words, around the planet, would you say that the deconstruction of that permeating energy would also lead to what we're hearing about today, which is a lot of infighting among what's called the cabal or the powers that be up at the top, the fact that there are a lot of claims being made about the human cabal, the collapsing of it, the lack of its what was once a strong power structure? Does that make sense as a...
Exactly. That's exactly what's going on, in that those people who had built their entire life structure around wealth and power and domination and all of, if that's no longer there, it's like they're looking around saying, what the hell am I going to do? And so they're digging their heels in, and they're fighting amongst themselves to see who wins. And so we're seeing that in politics and the monetary system and the terrorism and, you know,
yes.
I'm better than you are and all that type of thing. And that's because they no longer have a foundation. So to me, you're right on target.
Okay.
Rats in a sack.
I'd never heard it discussed this way, but it's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, I think so, because we've had all of the supporting. I mean, this is something that you've been talking about for many years. Cobra's been talking about. Everybody's had their little part, not little part, sometimes great part. The Procyon people adding their. Adding their fuel to the fire, because I was reading that the Procyon people had developed weapons, but they didn't want to share it with anybody. So it was like, you know, they sort of did us a favor. They went away. They went They went the extra mile to help us out.
Yeah, they have unique sonic technology, which they can adjust the frequency. For which they can address the frequency to, and they did a good job of honing in on and destroying and or clearing out a variety of, there were at minimum, I only reported them, I think 5 or 6 of them, but there were at minimum 15 Draco and Hydra reptilian undersea and underground bases that were taken out because of this Procyon sonic technology. So it came in very handy, but I, you know what? The point here really is that my own perspective of what I learned about the deconstruction of this three-dimensional energy construct, that the deconstruction is happening because this solar system a few years back started to enter an area of space which is much more dynamic, which is of a higher frequency, a higher vibration, and the lower frequency stuff can't tolerate it. It simply has to fall by the wayside. It just cannot thrive. And further, I understand that people, beings, whatever you want to call any living entities that are on this planet when it ultimately makes the higher transformational shift, if they're of a 3D or lower 4D form, they won't be able to tolerate the energy on this planet. And they're going to have to find another planet that has, if you will, 3D organic energy or 4D energy, that they can get more experiences there. But
or they're gonna die.
Well, the organic, I mean, yes.
The organic will simply die.
Yes.
You know, if you look at, we have this incredible collection of starships around the planet right now in our solar system. We got the biospheres and we got starships. All of them are smart enough to know that this event that took place in December of 2012 was about to happen, which then opened the way for all of them to come and participate in this marvelous transformation of this planet. I mean, they saw this coming. And so all of your friends and my friends from Andromeda and elsewhere, that, you know, they saw it happening. And they said, hey, we want to be there. And that's why, quite frankly, that's why the three of us came here and incarnated to be here at this time. This is where the action is in the whole universe. This is it.
Understand that there are at minimum five, and I learned this two plus years ago, 500 races, organic, if you will, organic 3D in terms of physicality, and higher, 4D, 5D, that are observing, that are around this planet in their space, watching, observing what's going on right now, and have for a while.
That's right. And it's because what's happening here has never happened before, and that is we've taken this incredibly dense planet, and you can call it third dimension, whatever you want to call it, and we're transforming it into this higher energy. And right, it's a massive undertaking. It's never happened before, and everybody wants to be here. It's a great show.
Right. Absolutely.
So, gentlemen, thank you so much for... I find this conversation has been incredibly inspiring. And one of the things that has inspired me, and also my co-producer, Colleen, is that wouldn't it be cool to have a kind of larger space for this, a larger forum, where you had a little more time to speak, like a kind of online conference. You don't even have to leave your house. We have an we take a whole day to discuss the state of play of the local galaxy, and we get a few of our friends together. What do you think of that?
I think it's a great idea.
I can set aside the time, sure.
Marvelous. Yeah. Well, I'll put the word out.
Between the JP, the people you know, the people Mark knows, the people I know, I'm sure we can call together a few of us interested.
Yeah. I'll get my people to talk to your people, okay?
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly.
So anyway, listen, here's a little, this is a two-minute thing. If you've got loudspeakers, people, and you're receiving the stereo, turn them up. Just stand back and enjoy this. This is a couple of spaceships, recordings of spaceships. One's the Andromedan, which is this low thing, and then there's the Pleiadian one too, which is wee 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 wee. And enjoy that, and then we'll be going on the outro. So thank you so much, Tolek. Thank you so much, Mark Kimmel. We're going to be... Mark's got a new book out. Get it on Amazon. It's called Chrysalis or Chrysalis. Tolek is Andromeda Council.com.
Correct.
MarkKimmel.net. MarkKimmel.com.
MarkKimmel.com.
MarkKimmel.com. Here we go. Good night, everybody.
Good night. And thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure.
Thanks, JP.
Check this out. Ray readings by